So, Mark, I think everybody is sick of us reminding them about the HangCon coming up in Florida, but this is actually going to be the last month we're going to be reminding them.
Yeah, after that, we'll actually be down there.
Yep. Yep. We're releasing. This is the. Actually, we're going to be releasing January 1st, so that'll be just before HangCon, but I'm not sure we want to be pests at this point.
Right, right. But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it still, especially since it's starting to get a little cold up here.
Yeah, well, everybody get your tickets or get ready to go down January 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th, which is a holiday weekend if you're planning on bringing in the kids. We look forward to seeing you down there. On the trail. Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupel, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Evening, Jonathan.
Mark, welcome. Welcome. How are you?
Good, good. Just getting into, I would guess, a little warm-up considering after this past weekend where it was pretty chilly.
Yeah, we're getting close to winter, but it's nice to get a little extra from time to time.
Yep. Yeah, I guess so. I guess. But yeah, actually, I got to put my Costco down under, or actually top quilt to the limits this weekend.
Oh yeah.
On the down in Allegheny with the scouts, and I would say a 13 degree is just a little bit too cold for a double layer Costco down top quilt.
Wow. Overstuff or no?
No, no. Okay. Just, you know, just the one that I've been using for a while, and it's time to invest in a better top quilt.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, There's always Christmas.
Yes, there is.
So I was hoping you'd accommodate something really quick here, Mark. It's been about a year since a friend of mine, Ryan Hatch, passed away.
Oh, and, yes.
He and I would go hiking in the mountains out west when I had business out that way. He was somebody that I worked with and really respected. He was one of the few people that I would go and sleep on the ground with because he would always find an opportunity to see the sunshine from the top of a mountain. And I guess I know I've never done this before, but I wanted to dedicate this episode to Ryan and I guess to all those other folks out there who loved the outdoors and who shared that love of outdoors with their friends.
That sounds good.
So today's episode is an interview of Caleb from Keown Outdoor Gear. And we chatted a little bit about him last week. I'm really looking forward to the interview. He's got a Kickstarter that he completed and kind of an innovative and a little bit of new and a little bit of old. So it'd be kind of fun to hear what he's got to say and have a great interview.
Yeah, it should be interesting. An interesting talk.
All right. So we're joined now by Caleb Lystrup from Keown Outdoor Gear. Welcome to the podcast, Caleb.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah. And I thought it might be fun just to talk a little bit about your background. You know, as somebody who's right now, I think hammock camping is so new in the camping space that everybody kind of comes from their own perspective. So it'd be kind of cool to learn a little bit more about your background, what got you into camping, if you got into it as a youth or whatever, and then to learn a little bit more about where you're going to and what got you to your perspective. So were you into camping or were you into the outdoors as a kid?
I was. So I grew up with a couple rowdy brothers and a rowdy younger sister. We lived in the middle of nowhere in Idaho, and I had a lot of opportunities to go outside and camp. I was part of a Cub Scout group that would go on these awesome snow adventures all the time. We had a good camp out every month. And I remember, for example, snowshoeing into the mountains and then finding just giant snowbanks and digging out little holes that we slept in. We made our own rope on that camp out. And then when we were finished, after a couple days of freezing and trying not to get too wet, we jumped on our sleds, which we had used to slide our gear up behind us. And then we sledded all the way back down on the mountain. It was like an hour long sled trip. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
That was one of the earlier campouts that got me really excited about camping. I was really lucky to have some great youth leaders who encouraged that kind of adventure. And then I think my mom was also happy to have the house clean for a couple days.
You'd come home and everything would be thrown away.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what Cub Scouts is for.
Yep.
Now you're actually still a student, right? You're a graduate student at Brigham Young?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm working on a PhD in mechanical engineering at BYU.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Is that something that kind of came out of something that you did as a youth, or does that segue at all into your camping experience, or does it just kind of, is one of those things, seemed like it'd be a good job at the time?
Yeah, I think both are true. I think on one hand, I knew it would lead to some great career opportunities. On the other, I've always been kind of an inventive kid. You know, I was always making things. One time I built a fort in my neighbor's yard. he didn't know it. And then he found out that I had used all the tires from his garden to build a wall. And I think that upset him a little bit. But anyway, I've always been kind of into making things and creation. And so I guess that has something to do with the engineering side of me.
So what got you into camping in a hammock as opposed to camping in a tent? I assume you tent camped as a kid, and there was some point in your life where either somebody forced you in a hammock, or you thought the hammock was the coolest idea in the world, or you wondered what it was like to be in a hammock. What led you down that path and obviously into the path of being an entrepreneur in the hammock community?
Yeah. So it started out, I started out sleeping on the ground and in tents. And I didn't really think much about using a hammock. However, I had some friends who were very much into hammocking. I think that's kind of a trend among millennials. And they insisted that I buy a hammock and come along. And so I did. And I have not slept in a tent since.
Wow.
That was a few years ago. I am a big hammock fan now.
That's awesome.
What's led me into entrepreneurship is that I'm always thinking of ways to invent products or and just use engineering to make something a little better. And when I was hammocking, that's when I started having the idea for the shell.
Just to kind of get through some of the introductions, your partner is not here, but you're doing the Keown thing with a partner. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of how that partnership started and what led to the Keown company as opposed to just Caleb coming up with an idea?
Yeah. So Casey Messick and I share a research lab. We're both grad students, and Casey does a lot of research with advanced metals. And so we actually had two, you know, his desk was right next to my desk, and we'd talk all the time as we worked on our research. You basically live in your research lab when you're a grad student. And so we became pretty good friends. Not only that, but we had actually worked on some research projects previously for different classes. At the beginning of last year, so that this would be the 2016-2017 academic year, Casey approached me and asked if I was interested in doing the Student Innovator of the Year competition with him. And I was immediately interested because I knew how cool of a teammate he is, how hard he works, and how smart he is. And so I thought that would be a good idea to work on a project with him. I knew I'd at least learn a lot from him. And so then we started brainstorming ideas, and we ended up settling with one that I had written down in one of my idea notebooks, and that was the idea for the shell.
Oh, that's cool. You have an idea notebook. What else is in there?
Well,
Or
I would tell you
that away.
I can't. Yeah, I'd have to kill you. I can't do that.
Fine.
Yeah. My idea notebooks are just, you know, I think everybody who likes to create and make things better will often keep a notebook or something, some way to write, you know, whether it's like a napkin or random scrap piece of paper, anything. And we write down ideas so that we can hold on to them. So I have almost 10 notebooks filled with different ideas and, you know, other things that I wanted to write down before I forgot.
That's cool. Yeah, I use a OneNote. I call it my capture tool. And I do something similar to that where, you know, I get an idea and I just chuck it in there so that I don't lose it.
Yeah, OneNote's pretty cool.
So let's get into your big projects now, what this is all about, really. Let's discuss the shell. Why don't you tell us about it in brief description. What is it?
The shell is an ultralight, all-in-one hammock shelter designed to take campers anywhere they want to go in all seasons. It sounds a little too good to be true, and we're proving that wrong. Or sorry, we're proving that right. Wait,
what?
Let me say this again.
Take
no.
Two.
let's repeat that. it sounds pretty awesome, and it is. You're excited about it.
That's good. Make sure you edit that the right way.
I don't know how to edit that.
Triple check that.
Yeah.
Let me write this.
It's like one of those double negative type things.
Caleb will be releasing a deadly virus into the world. Got it.
So now in some online articles and all, it mentions, you know, a little background of developing it and developing the shell and bringing it to production and all. You said you thought it up while camping. Was this an aha moment type thing, or was it something that you just, you know, slowly walked, you know, maybe this and then that, and then it developed, or is it just right there?
Yeah. This was kind of an aha moment that I didn't expect, and I didn't have time for it either. So I was camping with some friends and I mentioned an idea for a hammock type shelter that would wrap around your hammock. At this point, I had no idea that other products like that existed. And I mentioned this hammock shelter to Drew James. He actually later became one of our business mentors. And he's a successful entrepreneur. Two of his brothers have founded massive companies, including Omniture, Domo, and a restaurant chain called Cubby's. So they're very business savvy. And I was just kind of talking to him by a campfire, telling him about how I went about making my hammock warmer by wrapping another sleeping bag around the outside, and told him I started nerding out about the idea. And he stopped me and he said, "Caleb, this is a multi-million dollar idea." And I was like, "What? No, like, this is just me having fun and trying to figure out a way to sleep better." And again, I wasn't aware of other products at this time. And he said, "No, this is a really good idea. If you want, you should run with this. And I bet it could turn into something." And so that's when I went home and wrote it down in my idea book, thinking, well, this could be something. I had no idea that it would actually become something. So
That's great. Now, once it got into your idea book and all, and then you took it from there, how does your education in engineering and all, I mean, you're still in college getting going for your PhD and all, but you know, did your classes and everything help in designing this? Do you take that into account and all? Or
oh, absolutely.
So basically, really, you're already getting a return on investment for your tuition there.
Totally.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's really ironic. In fact, my worst class I've ever had, my lowest grade I've ever had, was in heat transfer. That's this super advanced mechanical engineering class where you study convection, conduction, radiation, and a bunch of empirical models to help you understand those modes of heat transfer. And I remember taking that class. When I took that class, I was planning on going into automotive engineering. And I remember thinking, you know, this is really not something that I'm too excited about. And I really struggled. I was also working about 30 hours a week on top of going to school. So I really was just swamped, and I ended up getting a terrible grade in the class. The ironic thing is, I've gone back to those textbooks, and I've had to relearn a lot of the material, because it turns out it was exactly what we needed in order to optimize the shell. So going back and restudying heat transfer mechanics has been super helpful. And Casey and I, and again, I will always say Casey's much smarter than I am. The two of us teamed up with, so Casey teamed up with another student, and then Casey and I kind of worked on using this code. We created a program that basically we would put in the geometry of the shell, and then we would define the weather conditions, and it would give us back the internal temperature. And so we were able to digitally optimize the warmth of the shell before even making it. When we were doing this, when we were engineering the heat transfer mechanics of the shell, that's when we had this sort of aha moment. We realized that we could create a thin heat trap underneath the shell. And this was something we actually went and filed a provisional patent for this idea, because it allows us to basically get another inch of insulation for free.
So you're doing a lot of, you know, not just trial and error, like, you know, a lot of us that are doing DIY stuff, you're actually designing computer models and everything to try and, you know, you're making the most of your work there instead of spending all this time and money on fabricating stuff that just doesn't work and trial and error and all, letting the computers do a lot of your work.
Yeah, that's right. It's helpful that we're students and that we have these class projects. I'm putting up some quotes with my fingers right now, where we're able to, you know, we're able to get a grade while working on something exciting like the shell. That's how that program was developed. It was for one of Casey's classes. And so that's what we're doing. We're applying a lot of engineering design as early on as possible, because it saves us so much time later, especially because, you know, I'm swamped. I still work as a researcher for my PhD, and I still have coursework and a lot of obligations. And so we're trying to be as efficient as possible with our time. It helps when you can use robust engineering tools.
That's great. Now, you ran shell on Kickstarter, the Kickstarter, it is over. It looks like, you know, looking on it right now, looks like it was pretty successful compared to what you were, what your original goal was. But you are still taking pre-orders, though, right?
That's right.
And then that would be just right on your website.
Yep, that's right. So if people go to our website, they can read about the shell. They can read about our design modifications and understand that this is a pre-order. And so they can kind of jump in with that group of Kickstarter backers if they want to. I know there are also a lot of people who are excited to buy a shell after they get a bunch of product reviews, which I think is also a great idea.
Oh, that's great.
Well, there'll be one on this podcast. I should disclose to our listeners that I actually was one of the backers. Number 13, actually. I couldn't get in any higher than that, but I was really excited to participate in the Kickstarter. So I am probably a little more excited than I should be, but I'll definitely put a review in there once we get in there.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
So you said you did a lot of like kind of engineering work to design the system and stuff. Did you go back in time to look at other people who'd done similar systems that kind of followed a similar model? You know, this is similar to other, I guess, pod-like systems. Back in 2003, I think 2002, Ed Speer had the Peapod, which was essentially a modified sleeping bag. I'm a big nut about Hennessy, and his Super Shelter, I think, uses some of the same kind of concepts that you have in terms of, not a vapor barrier, but an air barrier where you slow down airflow. And of course, Dutchware has the hammock sock now, which is popular for the winter time. Did you look at other systems that were out there, or did you kind of approach it from, well, this is a engineering problem and we want to kind of design from the ground up without having previous biases, I guess, because I can understand how there might be two ways of approaching it.
Yeah, I think there's so much to be learned from exploring other products, their strengths and weaknesses. One of the first steps that we did as we were developing the shell was we looked at similar products. We actually have the Peapod and the Hennessy Super Shelter in our table. This table explores 14 different products, and it goes through temperature, whether they're warming, goes through winter season, availability, the aesthetic, rain protection, bug protection, use, durability, weight, compressibility, and the ability to attract investors. And then we also compared their prices, upper and lower limit. And using this table, we were able to analyze the competition and really learn a lot from their strengths and try to avoid some of the same weaknesses. What ended up happening is we ended up coming up with the shell, which, you know, we love. So,
well, you have to say that. but I respect that.
Totally.
What were some of the weaknesses you decided you guys wanted to avoid?
Well, okay, so I don't want to bash on other products because I think these all have their strengths.
Yeah.
Usually a strength is coupled with a weakness, and this is something we've learned in reading through the comments on hammock forums, which have been insanely helpful to us. Mm-hmm. So I'll just talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses of. I'll take the Peapod for example. So the Peapod is warm. It brings you down to, correct me if I'm wrong, but about 20 degrees Fahrenheit, and uses a lot of insulation. So one of the disadvantages is that it's a little bit bulky. But one of the advantages is that it's pretty warm, and it's easy to use. I guess that's two advantages. And so what we were thinking was like, okay, let's try to make something that's easy to use and warm, but not as bulky. And so we created what we call a requirements matrix. It's a large table of prioritized design features. And we basically focused on making a product that would meet the most important design features. And we also tried to fill a gap. So a lot of these products are fantastic, but they don't really market to the millennial crowd. And they often involve multiple different products in order to have like your camping experience. You have to, you know, you set up your Peapod, but then you also have a large rain fly over the top. Or even maybe if you're using like a hammock sock, maybe you also have a top quilt or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there are a lot of add-ons. So we wanted to do an all-in-one that was also ultralight and also able to bring us to low temperatures.
That was one of the things that I thought was really attractive about it was, you know, if all I'm doing is sleeping in the hammock, this is like a super great lightweight solution. Like, you know, my son wants to do this 50 miles in 48 hours challenge next spring. And I was thinking, you know, this is one way that I might be able to keep up with him is to drop a little bit of the weight and just have something to crash in. So, you know, hopefully the design actually matches what you're anticipating, because I think you're kind of right on with that kind of concept.
Yeah, we are getting closer and closer. And with our final design adjustments, I think we'll be spot on. In comparing this to other products, we've gotten a lot of very insightful comments from people on hammock forums. Mm-hmm. And they've, you know, as good of an engineer as Casey and I aspire to be, or as good of engineers we aspire to be, we really can't replace the experience of people who have been hammocking much longer than we have. They're a lot more familiar with the conditions and with the needs of a hammock shelter. And so at first, you know, I was a little confused. I was like, well, these people don't understand what we're doing here. And when we first launched our Kickstarter, but then after reading their comments, I realized they actually made a ton of amazing points. And so we've been doing our best to integrate their feedback before we launch the flagship product, the Shell, so that we can have a product that is satisfying not only to like college campers like me, but also the more heavy duty, hardcore guys that are, you know, sleeping outside three nights out of the week or more.
So actually that sort of goes right along with what my next question was going to be, was the design of the Shell. You're going through your different prototypes and all. How has the actual design of it changed? Was there a growth to it where, you know, you did your computer models and all, but then actual made one, you know, where did you test it out in the cold to see what limits were or see how it worked out, or, and how did you, you know, does make your changes to that?
It started out with the computer models, and then we had three prototypes in place that we were testing out. One was very similar to the Peapod. Another incorporated the having a ridge line that goes inside of the shell. And then another one had a reflective lining. And using that, we were able to get a lot of feedback on, well, first of all, we were able to see what was warm. You know, your computer models are your best approximation at reality. And you learn a lot from them, but nothing beats real testing. And so, you know, we were able to take some of these out into the cold. We found out that the prototype that we were so proud of, our third prototype, that it actually didn't do super well in the cold, that you could comfortably get down to about 45 degrees, and that was about it. And that kind of bothered us. And so we're now on our eighth prototype. Our prototype is a lot warmer. And it also is a lot easier to use.
Now, did you want, after comments on, you know, or any feedback during the Kickstarter, did you make any changes after that, or what you introduced to Kickstarter, that's what you're running with?
No, so we've made some changes after that, yeah. After our Kickstarter closed, we were running a series of tests. And so basically, winter came around, so we were able to get some real cold weather, and a good friend of ours who is a serious hammocker and also a product development engineer, that was convenient, he took the shell out for a few days and tested it in below freezing conditions and also in the rain, and he came back with this like 3-page long email about how we need to improve the shell. And I was so frustrated because you spend a year working on something and you're so proud of it. And you're like, okay, this is ready to go. And then somebody who knows better than you do when it comes to testing brings back your product and they're like, okay, this is how it sucks. Let me tell you what you need to change.
Oh, no.
I was devastated. And so Casey and I talked about it. And we decided we needed to let our backers know that we were going to make some design adjustments and improve the shell. But we wanted to get their buy-in. So we actually surveyed them. And out of the people who answered, over 90% were all for the design changes. And those who weren't for the design changes were able to explain why, and we were able to address those issues. So basically, after the Kickstarter closed, we found out that there was a much better way to make the shell. I mean, it was already good, but it wasn't helping our backers get the product that they had purchased. And so we knew we needed to make some changes so that they were not disappointed. We wanted to make sure they were happy. And so we sent out those design changes in a survey and said, "What do you think?" And they said, "We love it." And since then, we've been working to make those happen.
Well, I think that's also a big thing, especially with things that you read on Kickstarter and a lot. You know, some of the only time you hear negative things is just like, you know, whether it's communication between the person running the Kickstarter and, you know, the backers and all, and, you know, being right up front with them. Hey, you know what? We have a product we're happy with, but we'll make it even better. You know, I think that's something that even the backers gives them a little bit more confidence that, you know, I backed a good project there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what we hope. Like I want the backers to be happy. That's my top priority with all of this. And so, and it's also, I feel like my integrity is on the line, you know, like they really need to get the product that they want. Mm-hmm. And we have the moral obligation to make that happen. We also have the skill set to make that happen because of our product development engineering experience. So that's what we're doing, even though it takes a lot more time and might be kind of frustrating for some backers who want to use it, you know, like this winter.
Right.
So that's where we're at with that.
Now the shell, it's, you know, it's basically almost like a cocoon or something. Does it work with any hammock?
It works with almost every hammock. So there are some hammocks that are pretty long that it won't work with. There are also some hammocks that are like different shapes, mm-hmm. that it wouldn't necessarily work with. But for most camping hammocks, and I'm talking about your, you know, 10 or 11 foot camping hammocks, it works just great with those.
Yeah. So it's gonna, your basic gathered end hammock, anywhere, you know, from 11, that's right. 11 foot length down.
That's right.
Now, there's also been some concerns about condensation. How do you approach that with being in an enclosed environment there with the cold weather and all?
Right. So condensation is definitely a big concern, and you know, people experience that when they camp in enclosed spaces. So our approach is to have vents near the hammocker's head so that they can breathe fresh air, and that they can that condensation can leave. And we're hoping to mitigate that as much as possible, to the point where it's a notable difference between what they would expect and what they see.
Good. Yeah, definitely condensation has been the big comment from a lot of the folks out there who probably have considered looking at your product or whatever. And it's probably one of the biggest things I've seen as like the reason that they're skeptical of it.
Yeah. And they have every right to be. Like, I'm totally okay with that, because once we have like tester feedback, or rather once we have reviews online, I'm very confident that they'll be positive and that people will be excited about the product.
It's interesting to consider, because you're having different conversations with different people. Like you mentioned, there's this one group of millennials who probably are really new to hammock camping. I mean, my daughter is a good example. She's probably on the cusp of being a millennial. She has a hammock that she uses to hang out with her buddies, but may not ever have had much, if any, camping experience. And so you've got this one group that may be completely new to the space, who are just trying to do an overnight. And then you've got this other group of old grumpy hammock campers who've seen it all and tried it all, and may have a different perspective about, you know, what your product might be capable of doing, and have different insights. And I'm interested to know if you've had different experiences with those different, the folks, different types of folks who are different audiences, because it's almost like you've got two different markets.
That's right. And in some ways it, you know, we're kind of straddling those two markets. But in other ways, we're able to get feedback from both that is valuable. So the younger millennial and post-millennial market is very optimistic and hopeful. They're excited to try new things. They love the experience that's associated with hammock camping, and they love the idea of lightweight gear. And then on the other hand, we have the, you know, more hardcore guys who've been doing this for years. They've got a lot of experience that I don't have, and they're able to lend tons of good advice. And they also are concerned about lightweight camping, but maybe not so much. And so we're able to, you know, take the positives of both of those and try to bring them into our product to make it as good as possible for the largest amount of people possible. And so that's kind of how we're steering it. We're basically taking the feedback from the older generation and the hope of the younger generation and mixing those all together.
That's pretty cool. Now, after the Kickstarter's complete, I mean, is your intention to approach the market through kind of a through a local distribution channel or kind of a more informal distribution channel? Or are you thinking about trying to approach some of the bigger retailers? Or what's your next approach? Or is this just a fun project and you're not necessarily sure that you want to, you know, go on with mass production?
So our goal is to make this make this the next big outdoor company. We have some pretty large and lofty goals in terms of upcoming products. Obviously, we're spending a lot more time with the current shell, so that, you know, because that's our priority. But we do have some products in the oven, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
As well, we have a team of, and this is how we've done everything. We're a bunch of college students. You know, we're college students with lofty goals and nothing to lose, and so we kind of just go for it. And we have three team members whose entire focus is on developing relationships with retail, so that we can enter the market big and have a lot of retail contracts in place when we're able to fulfill those orders. As well, we're doing some pre-orders online, and we're expanding Keown in a bunch of different ways. We have a bunch of different outlets for distributing the shell, or for getting the shell to customers. Some are through online purchases. Others are through, you know, if people want to go into like the store, they can buy them. We're very hopeful with some of the retailers that we're targeting. Yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
You know, one of the concerns I saw in one comment was that you were doing your production in China when there's so many domestic producers, for instance, who were, you know, who might be capable of doing that. You know, how do you answer that particular concern to the community as, you know, as somebody who wants to participate in the existing community? You know, one of the things I think that a lot of folks, especially the old grumpy ones, feel is that, you know, the hammock camping is always, it's come out of a space where it was first people doing DIY and then a lot of cottage manufacturers. In fact, a lot of cottage manufacturers are still the leaders in the market. You know, how do you plan to kind of work your organization into that space? Or is that just kind of how it's going to have to be?
Well, I think we're limited with our budget to focus on, having manufacturing mm-hmm. done abroad, just because it's so much cheaper to manufacture abroad. However, there are so many advantages to doing cottage manufacturing, such as a much shorter lead time. You're able to produce and distribute products way faster. I actually had a conversation with a girl on our supply chain team, and this was yesterday. I had a conversation with her yesterday night about this. And she was actually recommending that we explore some local manufacturers as well. It's something that I haven't really considered as a viable option, but she presented a pretty good argument for it. And so that might come around in the near future. We kind of have to stick with the current course for now. But with upcoming products and with future manufacturing of the shell, there's definitely potential in doing some local manufacturing through some of these cottage manufacturers, like you said, who have been, you know, leading the industry for a long time.
That's good. Yeah, I definitely understand there's definitely two sides to that conversation, and you know, ultimately you have to do what's best not only for you but for your customers. And I think a lot of the people who complain about the offshoring of manufacturing don't complain about the price benefits, the cost benefits they get as a consumer, right? They want both. They want it all. So I get it, right? You know, to have it to be cost effective and to fit into the market space that you want, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. And we're trying to develop a population of loyal customers. You know, we're trying to develop a strong brand, and so I think our focus is more on the younger crowd for now, just because they'll be with us for a long time, and we'll be able to supply them with awesome gear for their whole life if if we're able to win their hearts and trust. And so at this point, it's more wise for us to kind of steer to that, to get the price as low as possible. And hopefully we'll be able to expand soon, to have more, to have like faster, a faster supply chain through local manufacturing and, you know, and maybe appeal to some of those big time, mm-hmm. old school hammockers.
Yeah. Or even have an entry level product in a more sophisticated project for people who might be doing something different.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's, hopefully that'll come around here pretty soon.
Well, I know, I try to ask this of a lot of our guests. I know Mark's probably going to roll his eyes, but I'm always curious if there was one thing that you could tell everybody, it doesn't have to be hammock camping related. But if there's one thing that you wanted to kind of share that you felt like you could teach everyone, what would it be?
Yeah. So this is a great question. I would say that breakthroughs happen when you're too dumb to believe that something is impossible. And in an attempt to make the impossible, with enough time and engineering, you can make it happen.
Cool.
So Jonathan got his usual question out, and that would be off to me. We always, same thing, like to do one off topic out of the usual discussion here. There is actually a while, it pops up every few days or so, a Walmart camping thread on the forum. And what is there one cheap thing that you guys use? And this is for everybody, all three of us. Is there one cheap thing that, you know, most people would be buying from an REI or a cottage vendor or something, that what you get from Walmart is just fine? Jonathan, how about you first?
Oh, no.
Yep.
I should have thought about this one ahead of time.
Hey, you wrote the question.
I didn't have an answer.
Right now, I'm going through my mind thinking about the different things that I take camping, and I'm thinking about which one is the cheapest. And it's actually kind of depressing because I think we spend a lot of money on camping.
We do. We do. We all do. Okay. Well, you guys think, I'll even throw it out there. Now, last year, especially once after I made my first tarp, and I saw everybody, you know, doing this porch mode and all this, I wanted, and plus with, I've got horrible knees, I wanted to get a pair of trekking poles, and started looking. I saw these Black Diamond ones and all the, you know, all these different ones, and $70, $80, $90 and up. And I had no intention of investing that kind of money in something I didn't know if it would work. So I was in Walmart and I saw a pair of $17 ones. And you know what? I've been using them for about a year or so, and they've been working great. And I figured, you know, $17, if they work horrible, that doesn't work for me. You know what? It's no love lost or anything. But if they do work and I get a year, 2 years out of them, maybe I'll just buy another $17 pair. Maybe they'll be $19 by that time. Who knows? Or invest the money in a more expensive pair. But you know what? The only thing I've had to do to them so far is tighten two screws. That's the only maintenance. And you know what? I don't hike thousands of miles a year. So if I was, maybe they wouldn't be working for me, but for my once a month outing, they work perfect.
That's cool.
So now you guys had time to think about it and go right ahead.
Yeah, I was zoning out.
Yeah, I figured that.
Jonathan, maybe you should go last so that we can end with a bang I can go in the middle.
That's just putting pressure on.
The low point in the middle. Is that all right?
Sure. What do you got?
All right. So, okay, I'll just run two by you, and then you can tell me which one I should talk about. One is a super cheap hot dog skewer that you can like rotate the hot dog with. It's pretty cool. There's this little knob on the handle that allows you to rotate the hot dog without like rotating your wrist. that's kind of cool. And it was like $5. The other The other thing is just like rope. I think you can spend, you know, you can spend so much money on rope. And I found that just some cheapo twine at Walmart works super well for a lot of applications.
That's pretty cool.
So which of those should I talk about?
Oh, you're talking about it right now.
Yeah, the twine's cool, but the hot dog thing, man.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear about.
That's awesome.
All right, I'll talk about that one. So I have this hot dog skewer, and it collapses. So it's like, it's really small. I actually keep it in the center console in my car. There's this little hot dog skewer that extends, and it has two prongs on the end. And then it also has this little knob on the handle, and you can rotate the hot dog without taking your hand off of the handle or like moving your hand. I just think that's really cool. And it's really, I'm sure it was super cheap to make, probably just a couple dollars, maybe five. And it allows you to get the perfect roast on your hot dog or marshmallow or whatever you're cooking. And it collapses. So I like that too. So it's cheap and really easy to use.
That's pretty cool. I want one.
All right. Yeah, I want one too.
I'll take a picture and send them your way if you want.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You can kind of, okay.
That's nice. Yeah. Do you take hot dogs out into the woods when you're camping, or is this more for marshmallows?
Well, I'll tell you about a funny camping experience. Some buddies and I went on a survival camp out where we were only going to eat what we could find. And we ended up bringing a pack. Somebody snuck a hot dog pack.
I just happened to find a pack of hot dogs in my pack. I don't know how it got there.
Yeah. So we ended up eating two. I believe in, if you're going to hunt, you better eat it. And we ended up eating two rabbits and a snake. But we were still pretty hungry. And so we busted out the hot dogs.
Nice.
There you go.
All right, my turn, yep. Right? I don't think my homemade alcohol stove counts because you can't buy them at Walmart, although the pop I probably bought at Walmart. So I'm going to go with my water bottles, smart water bottles.
Oh yeah.
Those are pretty much just, I used to carry a pair of Nalgene's way back when, cause they're like bomb proof. And then at some point I saw a comment or something like that about the water bottles from that, you know, you just gotta get them at Walmart or wherever for the smart water, which is the 1 liter water bottles. And they're awesome. They fit really well in the pockets of my pack. One of them, I actually marked out the measurements on the side, cause I liked that about my Nalgene bottle too, as I had measurements in milliliters and measurements in cups so that I could use it as a measuring container when I'm cooking. So I remarked all that out, and I kind of just, you know, I throw them in the pack, and that's what I use when I, for water, when I'm out backpacking. I don't use the water reservoir. I don't use the Nalgene bottles anymore. I just have that. And that works out really well for me. Super cheap.
Awesome.
In fact, the first one I ever tried, I actually mooched from the recycling bin at work. I'm probably not supposed to admit that because my wife's going to be embarrassed, but I actually grabbed it from work and brought it home and washed it out. And I used that for a while.
That's awesome.
Caleb, it was really super cool having you on and spending the time, taking the time to kind of talk a little bit about your experience, both with what you're doing in the Kickstarter and a little bit about yourself. I'm certain that people are going to be interested to hear about it. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Totally. Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Mark. You guys rock. This has been a fun conversation.
So, Mark, I know you go back like a long way camping and backpacking and being with scouts and stuff like that. So you're an old hand, but I know for me, I didn't start actually backcountry backpacking until I was in high school or later than that, college time. So mm-hmm. For me, it was a very different experience. And sometimes being out in the middle of the woods, there's a lot of noises that you're not familiar with.
Yes.
What's been kind of your scariest experience?
To be honest, I don't remember too many because when I was in scouts, you got a big group of probably 20 20 kids, say, with another 5-6 adults. And, you know, the oldest ones are probably 16, 17 years old, most of them younger than that. They're not the quietest kids. So I'm sure you don't need any bells or whistles or anything to scare any animals or wildlife away. Them just trampling through the woods and yelling and screaming, and the older ones sending the younger ones out for, what was it? I think it was snipe hunting or something like that. You send them out in the woods with the old metal plates that were in the bottom of the mess kit, banging them together to get them to try and go snipe hunting and all. So they'd scare most of the things away. Actually, I don't even know, scariest, but most nervous probably was when when we were in the Letchworth Trail with the boys this summer.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, as usual, I went off probably about 75 to 100 yards off from you, where you guys were. And it probably wasn't as close as I thought because of the way the echoing in of the woods and all, and being 11, 12 o'clock at night. But hearing the rustling of leaves and the howling of the coyotes and all.
Okay. Yeah. The coyotes.
And they sounded close, and I know them. They're out there and all. So, but I was just nervous, you know, wondering what's out there, especially once you get the one, you know, with the, when you have the tarp up and everything, you sort of, I did have it in porch mode at the time, but still you're limited on what you can see and all. So,
got it.
Yeah, but that's probably the only for me. So,
do you ever think of using earplugs or anything like that?
No, because then it's just too quiet. I mean, and that only lasted, you know, I did fall asleep. It wasn't something that kept me up all night or anything, you know, maybe 5-10 minutes, and then, you know, I got over it and heard him again, and then, you know, the 5-10 minutes, and then got over it. Then I think didn't you hear them too later though?
I thought we did, yeah.
So they were around there, but, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. We deal with it, right?
Yeah, it was weird that we ended up having one less boy than we anticipated the next morning, but we figured that one out too, so.
Yeah, but you know, nature's got to survive too. They got to eat. So, and it's all about sacrifice.
It was the slow boy.
Yeah. Well, that's why you always make sure you're not the slowest one in the group.
That's right. Yeah, funny enough, I've had a few times when I've been woken up in the middle of the night with stuff that's made me nervous. I know one time I woke up with something scratching my back, and I think it was probably a porcupine or something walking under the hammock. Mm-hmm. And that definitely freaked me out. But the worst was actually not in the woods per se. I was actually sleeping overnight at Boy Scout camp, and was for some leadership training or something that I was doing with the scouts. It was down at Shelkoff, which is the local Boy Scout camp here in Western New York. And I was off kind of in my own space because everybody else was in a tent and I needed to be in the trees. So I was in a hammock. It was great. But I don't know what it was. I have a feeling that it was actually nothing at all. But I just remember waking up and just being so scared that I screamed. I don't even know what woke me up. But, you know, my screaming actually kind of was, I either it woke me up or I woke up and screamed, but it was just like, and screaming like a girl. This was not like a manly scream in any way. This was me totally freaked out. And to this day, I don't know what it was that woke me up, but there's been a couple of times when I felt like maybe I just want to put a couple of earplugs in and not have to deal with night sounds and just try to go to sleep.
Yeah, it helps. And I mean, to be honest, I've never really tried it. Actually, going along with the wildlife, and this really isn't a scary moment, but, and at the time I wasn't nervous. So when I was in Scouts, we used to, right in Smithtown where I grew up, we have local beaches right on the north shore of Long Island. So it's Long Island Sound. And we would do every year we would do a canoeing trip. We'd go down right in town, there was a river that would empty into the Long Island Sound. And we do a canoe trip, a few miles, about a half a day, a little bit more. And we drop off the trailer of canoes at the mouth of the river. Not the mouth, but more at the source of the river. And then depending on which way the tide was, we'd go down to the beach and then have a camp out overnight on the beach. So I was one of the older boys, had a bunch of friends actually camping, friends from school camping down the beach. I went down there, visit them, hung out for a while, and I came back. All the adults were sitting around a campfire. It was a beautiful night out. And I go to my dad, who was one of the leaders. Hey, I'm going to cowboy camp. We had a dining fly. I sort of was underneath that. My dad's like, sure, no problem. Just make sure you put your shoes away. There's a lot of foxes around. So later at night, I happen to wake up and I feel something on my head tugging at my hair. And I happen to look up and I was eye to eye with a little fox who was chewing on my head.
Oh my goodness.
On my hair. So I wasn't even scared because the thing was, you know, it's the size of a big cat. And
sure.
So it ran away. Next morning, I'm looking for my shoes and I found one of them. My dad tells me, did you put them in your tent like I told you? Of course I didn't. Well, it ended up I found one of my shoes when I was doing my morning watering of the dunes and happened to look down, and right there was, almost to where I was one of my my other shoe that the fox stole. So, but that was not a scary moment, but it was funny with the dealing with wildlife.
Yeah, they're wild.
Yep.
Can't control them. Well, I'd love to hear what our listeners have experienced, or, you know, if they use any sleep aids. I know my best sleep aid is really the wind. So I'd love to hear what other people's, you know, sleep aids are to help them to not hear the wildlife as much and to get some more rest.
So, Jonathan, next month we have coming up an interesting company in design here. It is Sierra Madre Research.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and they've got some real interesting designs and tarp designs and all that. Should be fun to listen to.
Well, they were recently on television.
Yes, they were.
And so I'm going to be very interested in talking about their experience as guests on a very famous television show. If our listeners want to do some research ahead of time, they could do that. But we'll be talking about it next month.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one, especially with that television experience and all. I want to hear about behind the scenes stuff, what goes on.
Yeah, I totally do too. As we're closing out the show, Mark, I'd like to actually thank a few new donors to the podcast this month. We have 4 new donors on Patreon, which I was really shocked. I'm guessing people love to hear their names. So in order, we had John Phillips. Thank you. Dan Weiss. Awesome. Ellery Curtis and Scott Brand. So thanks to all of you who are our new patrons on our Patreon campaign. And of course, all those who've either donated to buy us coffee in the past or other people who are donors on Patreon.
Thanks to all our donors that we've had in the past. As you know, producing and hosting a podcast isn't free, so every little bit counts. If you're a cottage manufacturer or vendor interested in publicizing your product on the podcast, please reach out to us for more information, especially with Christmas coming and some great shows in line this winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out our website, the website for our informal t-shirt sponsor at www.hotehammock.com. That's H-A-U-T-E hammock.com. They're actually the only company out there making hammock-related t-shirts specifically for the hammock camping community. You can get our logo on a t-shirt. You can actually get a really cool Dutchware t-shirt. And there's really some really neat designs as well. If you want to go, you know, non-brand specific and still want to show to the world that you're a hammock nerd like we are.
And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at hyohpodcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes, or even better, you can buy us a cup of coffee by going directly to hyohpodcast.com/donate and making a one-time donation.
Right. Don't forget to tell your friends about us, and be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. I know I've been checking out some of the other ones because Apple changed the iTunes app a little bit, and that was a little wonky, but I'm back to iTunes again.
As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Finally, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro, and to ITX for hosting our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for hanging around. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it? Or should you even dare? Add two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.